Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Kylie Camps, owner of the Kind Parenting Company, wife, proud mum of twin boys, and happiness advocate. This podcast is a place for women who want more from life. It's your time to cultivate more self-care, compassion, happiness, love, and confidence. Let's have real conversations to help you feel better, choose better, and live your best life. Welcome to episode number 26. Today's podcast is a really exciting topic that's close to my heart. But before we jump into this, I wanted to take a quick moment to thank today's sponsor of the podcast. And that is Australian Natural Care. Now, Australian Natural Care is a healthcare company that began over 30 years ago in Byron Bay, which just so happens to be one of my all-time favorite places. They have nearly 100 vitamins and supplements and over 500 wellness products in their range. Now, you might not have heard of them before, but let me tell you, they are a legit company. They sell online directly from their website, and I recommend jumping over to their site to peruse their range. The two products from the range that I have been taking now consistently for over 2 months include the magnesium capsules and also a good night's sleep. This is a product that I really, really stand behind, and you guys know that I'm all about optimizing and making sure you get the best quality rest available. A good night's sleep is a traditional calming and sedative herb mixture for sleeplessness, and it also includes added magnesium. Now, as I mentioned, I am also taking the magnesium supplement. This was recommended to me personally, and of course, you should always, always check with your own healthcare provider. But magnesium was recommended for me personally because I do tend to struggle with low moods and a little irritability just before my period is due. And since committing and being really, really consistent with taking this supplement, I have 100% seen a reduction in just how grumpy I get in those weeks before my period. It's also really reduced the cramps in my stomach and my lower back pain as well at that time of the month. So I love them because they don't make me nauseous and the tablets are easy to swallow. And I just really, really believe in Australian natural care. If you'd like to check out their range, make sure you visit the show notes and I'll pop a link to their website. I also have a 20% off discount code to share with you, which is KC2020, all in capitals. So that's capital K, capital C, 20. And that gets you 20% off their entire range. If you've been meaning to prioritize your health and wellness, then definitely jump over to australiannaturalcare.com.au and have a look for yourself at the super high quality products they stock. Now, let's dive into the episode. So episode 26. Now today I wanted to talk about a topic that is really, really important to me. I feel like I always say that. But this topic is, and that topic is exercise. Now we've called this episode The Reasons Why Exercise is the Answer Sometimes, because it's not always the answer for everything. And there are certainly times in life when you need to rest and recover. But I know for myself when I'm going through anything really, whether life's throwing me curveballs or I'm feeling like I'm on top of everything, exercise really, really does help me. And so for today's episode, I have a qualified personal trainer, not to mention dietitian, joining me. And her name is Mel. Mel actually works for us now, which is amazing. She's way overqualified to be my PA, but she is a dream come true. And we just thought we would sit down and chat with you about 10 reasons why exercise is the answer. So thanks for letting me rope you in, Mel.
No worries. I'm glad to be here.
So before we do jump into those 10 reasons why, can you let everyone know a little bit more about you?
Sure.
I've totally put her on the spot.
All good.
Tell us all your secrets, Mel.
I have lots, but so as Kylie said, my name is Melissa and I am an accredited practicing dietitian, sports dietitian, and more recently personal trainer. So I grew up in Brisbane and I actually had a love of physio or wanted to be one, but unfortunately, at the end of grade 12, didn't get good enough scores to get into physio and actually decided to become a dietitian. So from that, I ended up graduating, moving to Cairns, where I spent 3.5 years working with a credentialed diabetes educator.
Beautiful Cairns. I like
Yes. Cairns is actually a beautiful place. It's very transient, but it is lovely once you get back to the humidity. It's
essential, isn't it?
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. So I did spend my first 3.5 years up there, which was really great and allowed me to gain a bucket load of experience working in private practice. And from there, I finished up, went on a 6-week holiday on my own and moved back to Brisbane. So, for the last 4 years, I've been working in Brisbane, between Brisbane, Sunshine Coast, and now Gold Coast, and have my own business as a dietitian 2 days a week, and also now Kylie's PA 3 days a week, which is very exciting.
And yes, for those of you thinking it, even though I've already said it, she is way overqualified to work for us. But it's funny how it kind of came about, because you might remember a couple of months ago I put it out online that I really needed to find someone to come on board and help out. And I actually know Mel personally. It's kind of a long story.
It is.
We can make it quick though.
We can. We can shorten it.
We can shorten it. So we've known each other
pretty much since
our whole lives. Yeah. It's funny, at our recent event, Mel's mum, who is the godmother of one of my sisters, was saying that she remembers when I was born.
Crazy.
Which is wild. Yeah. So our parents lived next door to one another when my mum was pregnant with me. So we always grew up just family friends and always spent time together as families. And Mel has a little brother and I'm one of three. So we would always be playing and I don't know, I just remember like cubby houses and visiting you guys. And
which seems like the end of the earth where we lived initially.
Yeah. It seemed like we lived really far apart, even though it wasn't. It was like half an hour. But when you're little, it feels that way. And then it wasn't until, I think a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago at a family function where my dad's always been, you know, a mad family historian, and there was a gap in the puzzle, and yeah, Kylie's mum just happened to be at this family function, and my mum and my dad got talking, and turns out we're actually related.
We're all in this together. So I don't really know what our technical term would be.
Oh, I'd probably say cousins removed, but
removed.
It's somewhat related.
Yeah, there is a definite relation. And so when I put it out there that I was needing someone and Mel sent me a message, my response to her was, nope, you're too qualified. You don't want this job. And she was like, no, like, let's just see. And I had been interviewing other people as well. And then you came down one day and as soon as she walked in, I was like, oh, this is going to be easy. This will be just fine having Mel here. And it was like that, hey.
Yeah, it actually came at a perfect time. Work had been really slow and only the day before I had been talking to my partner about looking for work, but obviously difficulty when I'm a stepmom to three young boys. I work in Brisbane. We live on the Gold Coast. So lots of travel and it was hard to try and find something that would be flexible and fit in with our lifestyle. And when Kylie posted, I thought, just reach out and see what happens.
So good. And she just, like, Mel just breezed over the stepmom to three young boys part.
Yes.
How old are the boys?
They are just turned 6 and then twin boys that will actually be 4 next week.
So she gets it. She gets the chaos of life. Sorry. She just comes in here. And
Instant family.
But it's great. It's working really, really well, which is exciting. And so whilst she's here today working, I thought it'd be cool to pull her into this episode because she's qualified, and these are kind of the conversations we would be having anyway amongst ourselves, so I thought it would be cool to just record it. So I guess where to start from here, there are so many reasons why exercise is important, and not just the physical reasons. You know, there's the mental reasons, which I would argue are far more important than the physical ones for sure, And so we've listed out a couple of things that we wanted to just touch on with you. And the first is the release of endorphins. Now, physical activity can, like it's proven, to improve your mood. And so many of us make exercise about being hard. And it's like something that you don't want to do. And it's a chore and it's a punishment. And I get it. But if you can really focus on the symptom that the exercise will deliver to you rather than the actual act of doing that exercise, like if you really focus in on the fact that you're going to have that big release of endorphins, which are your feel-good hormones, it makes it a little more enticing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when you find a reason, to exercise that is beyond just I have to, It can really make exercise more exciting and something that you actually enjoy. I know for myself over the years, last year in particular, I had a bit of a difficult time, and exercise was really something that I leant on just not only to make me feel happy, but just to give me a stress relief, something different. You know, often as a dietitian, I see people turning towards food as a means of coping with moods and stress. And I think exercise can be at times something that can be a great alternative.
Yeah. And I guess with food, there is that instant gratification and also the endorphin release as well that comes with food, you know, that you have your serotonin and all of that start coming through your system. So it can be a great replacement for rather than turning to binging and those sorts of things. Exercise also is proven to reduce feelings of stress, anxiety, and depression, which makes sense.
Definitely.
Yeah. So the next tip that we had is that evidence suggests that including activities such as walking for 30 minutes, 5 days a week can increase your life expectancy by 1.5 to 3 years. So just moving your body, and that doesn't have to be, I'm imagining it doesn't have to be an intense power walk, You're not running a marathon, but just making sure that you get out and move your body.
Yeah, I mean, what we forget is that when we think about energy expenditure over the course of the day, you've got not only, you know, your physical activity, which is your planned exercise, but you've also got your non-exercise activity. So that is the incidental stuff. And we actually don't realize that when we concentrate on moving our body more, you actually get the benefit of increased life expectancy. But you also get the benefit of just burning more energy throughout the day. So it actually takes more for our body to stand up than it does to sit down. Mm-hmm. And we always hear those, general rule of thumb to aim to get 10,000 steps a day in. And this can be, you know, more easily achieved if we do a 30-minute walk a day. But just think of ways that you could include that. If you don't have 30 minutes a day in a block, don't forget that you might be able to include a 15-minute walk in the morning and a 15-minute walk in the afternoon, or even 3 10-minute walks. Sometimes we can get overwhelmed and think, oh, 30 minutes, where do I fit that in? But the reality is that there are ways. It's just navigating your time and understanding how that can be included.
Yeah, because even, you know, when the boys were younger, just getting them out in the pram for a 10-minute walk sometimes would be all I could manage. But, you know, you could do that twice or three times a day to get your steps up. Or even if it's, you know, your kids practicing riding their balance bikes or their bikes with training wheels or their kick-along bikes, whatever it is, up and down the path in front of your house, and you're walking back and forth and back and forth and back and forth for 5 to 10 minutes, It all adds up. So rather than sitting down and watching your kids doing it, standing up and actually moving your body as well. It's all that incidental movement which helps.
And I sometimes say to clients, like, if you got up for the last 5 minutes of every hour that you were working, imagine how many extra steps in a day you could fit in.
Yeah, that's a good way to
look at it. So sometimes we think, oh, you know, where do I literally fit it? But if you said, okay, at 10:55, 11:55, 12:55, you got up and just moved your body for those extra 5 minutes, you could easily fit in an extra half an hour, 45 minutes in a day that you weren't previously doing before.
And just explain to your boss.
That's it. Just be like, I need to go to the toilet, or I need to fill up my drink bottle.
Mel does. She just took a minute to lunge up and down the stairs, and that's fine.
It's always a reason to move.
That's funny. Tip number three, Val, is?
So basically over 70% of the Australian adult population actually suffers from at least one chronic disease, and a quarter of those actually suffer from two or more.
That is a big stat.
It's massive. Yeah. And when you think, like, working as a dietitian in private practice, I often see clients, I'd say chronic disease would probably be my number one referral basis. So I have clients who come on chronic disease care plans.
And you just, like, what constitutes a chronic disease?
So it's something basically that people will live with, you know, long term. So it's an ongoing thing. So some examples would be type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, fatty liver, celiac disease, those kinds of things. So basically, there are some risk factors for chronic disease that we can't change. So obviously, we can't change our family history or where we come from. We can't change our age. Gender is something, obviously, that
can be changed
now, but generally speaking, non-modifiable. But physical inactivity is actually one that is really, really easy for us to change. So it is something that we can go from not doing at all to actually making it part of our daily routine.
It's within most people's reach.
Definitely. Everyone's reach, yeah. Definitely, that's right. And if you're not sure if it can be, if you've got a pre-existing injury or you just don't know how it can work, there are health professionals that you can seek the help of, say an exercise physiologist, who can actually give you specific exercises that can suit your routine or injury or rehab, whatever it might be that you're going through. So the research suggests that regular exercise can actually reduce the risk factors of things like cardiovascular disease and stroke, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, some cancers, and osteoporosis.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
You can just stop there. That's probably enough of a reason to move.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Because honestly, I can tell you now from experience that chronic disease is occurring earlier and earlier and earlier in the people that we see. You know, I have young children in primary school coming into my office with things like fatty liver. And, yeah, you know, these are things that are lifestyle related and can be modifiable. So if moving your body for just, you know, an extra 10 to 20 or 30 minutes every day can make these improvements, it's 100% worth it.
And it's interesting because, like you said, like it's a psychological thing, isn't it? It's,
definitely.
For a lot of people, it's not necessarily the ability, it's getting them to look at it differently and approach it in a way
perspective.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So yeah, that's fascinating. The next reason we've got is, exercise is recognized as one of the most effective strategies to help make bones as strong as possible. Reducing the risk of fractures from falls later in life, bone density can be maintained or start to decrease when a person reaches their 30s to 40s. You can still increase your bone density, but it often does decrease.
That's right.
In women from the age of 45, bone loss begins to increase to 1 to 2% per year, and upon the onset of menopause can increase to 2 to 4% per year. For men, it remains relatively stable until about 45 to 55 years, when then it can begin to decrease by 0.5%, 2% per year. Now, that is a fact that I am really, really interested in, because I didn't know that until probably within the last couple of years. I didn't understand how important it is to lift weights and make my bones strong, mm-hmm. because I want to be strong later in life.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be able to lift my grandkids up if the boys decide to have kids. I want to be able to pack my own groceries, live on my own, all of those sorts of things. And getting the exercise in now can just add so much value, you know, not just right now, but later in life as well.
That's it. I think sometimes we forget the benefit long-term of what we do now.
Looking after future us.
That's exactly right. Like, often we tend to think,
menopausal kind of. That'll be a fun time.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I think sometimes we focus on right here and right now, but just remember that unfortunately, we all age.
Or fortunately.
And at some point we do need to remember that we want to put ourselves in the best possible stead moving forward. And one of the biggest things, if we think of bones, is it's amazing how many people fracture a bone and struggle with rehabilitation later in life. Mm. I mean, imagine falling over and not being able to even get yourself back up.
Yeah, and you hear it. You hear, you know, the woman or the man who's in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and it's just a fall.
That's it. Or even not even a fall. My grandmother only the other week was in tears to us crying, and turns out that, you know, she bent over to pick something up, and I'm talking something really, really light, and then stood up and her back was in so much pain. And she went to the doctor and has been told she has crushed vertebrae. Oh, wow. You know, little things like that really reinforced to me the importance of strengthening my bones now and looking after my future self.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes me think, like, now at 32, and I was having a similar conversation yesterday with one of the very young trainers at our gym, because he was saying, this is kind of going off on a tangent, but, you know, we're here. Let's go. I can always edit this bit out. But I have just started my Invisalign journey at 32. And he is 22, I think, and he was saying he really wants to get his Invisalign done, but he's like, I'm 22, like I'm in the prime. And I was saying to him, I know you feel like you're in your prime, but at 32, you're still going to feel in your prime. You still feel super young. And so my point here is that Kylie at 32, I can still remember being Kylie at schoolies.
Mm.
And like, it doesn't seem that long ago. And I can still remember being in my 20s and, you know, before I know it, I'm going to be Kylie at 42.
That's it.
And mentally maybe still feel like Kylie at 32 in some areas of life. So you want to keep your mental faculties strong.
Like, definitely.
You want to have your wits about you, but you also don't want your body to let you down. You don't want your body crumbling and you still feel physically strong, mentally strong or emotionally strong. I think it's important to just, you know, think of the whole package.
Definitely.
And then reason number five is?
So sarcopenia is an age-related multifactorial process that actually relates to the loss of lean tissue mass. So the onset of this can be insidious, but its progression can obviously be greatly accelerated by physical inactivity and poor nutrition. So it's actually quite surprising that after the age of 30, so we've both hit that already, it is said that adults lose 3-8% of their muscle mass per decade. So that can contribute to a decrease in muscle strength and power, important predictors of balance, which is really important as we get older, and the occurrence of falls and mortality. So there's often something that, you know, women tend to be at times quite fearful of actually resistance training and lifting weights, because, I mean, I was there when I was younger, but you fear getting big or bulky.
Yeah.
And I think something really important to know is there's so much more to resistance exercise than getting big and bulky. And that is that, you know, resistance exercise can actually combat the loss of muscle mass and function. But obviously understanding that it has to be accompanied by the right diet, and that's where protein can be a really important factor. And I think as a dietitian, putting that hat on now, something that I often find with clients is protein is something that as women, maybe we don't often have enough of within our diet.
Mm.
And I think it can be
often not something we crave.
No, not at all. And I think often it tends to be more of those, you know, carb-based meals that we tend to gravitate towards, mainly because carbohydrate is in everything. And I'm an advocate of carbs, everything.
Yeah.
I'm an advocate of carbs. So I'm not here saying not to have that. But I think it's really important to make sure that we have that minimum protein requirement, which for anyone who is interested, the minimum amount really that you'd be aiming for is 1 gram of protein per kilo of body weight. So if you're a 60 kilogram woman, you'd be aiming for at least a minimum of 60 grams of protein per day. If you're a 100 kilogram person, 100 grams of protein
per day. That's such a good rule of thumb to know.
Generally speaking, yeah. Obviously, if you have different goals, then that can be adjusted. But for the average population, that can be a really really baseline factor to go off.
It's a really good place to start. And I know for myself, like, I used to eat no meat at all. I would consider myself a vegetarian, but I wasn't getting enough protein from other sources. And then about a year ago, I started to introduce animal protein again into my diet. It made the biggest difference.
Definitely.
It really did. Like, and I'm not saying that everyone needs to have animal protein in their diet. I don't know. I'm not educated enough to make that sweeping statement. But I know for myself, as a vegetarian, I wasn't putting in the effort to get protein in.
Yeah.
Because it's harder.
Yeah, it is. And I think if you are vegetarian or vegan, you can definitely achieve your protein requirements in a day. But number one, it is harder. And number two, you have to make sure you're getting the right combination to ensure that you're getting all of those essential and non-essential amino acids.
Mm, so interesting. Mm. Now, the next reason we've got that is a sleep one. While we sleep, numerous processes occur in the body, including memory consolidation, which I talk about a lot for babies and toddlers, but it's also relevant to us as adults, of course. Clearance of brain metabolites and restoration of nervous, immune, skeletal, and muscular systems. Now, virtually all bodily systems are impacted by poor or inadequate sleep. So having broken sleep, which we all know, like we know this, it can cause us short-term side effects, but it can also predispose an individual to chronic disease and early mortality, which is scary.
Definitely.
But that's something I say, you know, like we know that we need food to survive. We know we need water to survive. We need fresh air to survive, but we also need sleep. It's very, very important, which is why, you know, when we are struggling with sleep deprivation, it's so powerful to understand that it is one of your basic human needs being compromised and to just lower the expectations that you have on yourself. But really, really interesting to know that by improving your physical activity levels, it has been linked to improving sleep. Now, improving sleep has not necessarily resulted in increased levels of physical activity. So that's an interesting thing to note, because often people will think, I need to get a full night's rest before I can exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I've certainly been there. And like I said at the start of the podcast, there are times when you need to just listen to your body, and if you're tired, not train. But that's an interesting link, isn't it, to say, okay, improved physical increased physical activity is not dependent upon getting that
sleep.
Yeah, so you don't.
I think it's sometimes where discipline just comes in, isn't
it?
Like
commitment.
Like if it's important to you, I know there's been times now that I'm stepmom where my whole routine has had to adjust and change depending on whether we have the boys or not. And there are some times where I have to make that commitment to get up early to be able to fit in the exercise.
She's wild. Sometimes she gets up at like 3.
Yeah, sometimes.
She's me a few years ago.
Sometimes it's 3:30. But the reality is that, yeah, me getting up at 3:30 actually has nothing to do with whether I've had a good night's sleep. It's literally just a discipline of going, this is important to me, this makes me feel good, and if I don't do it now, I won't get a chance to get it in today.
The pleasure versus the pain.
That's exactly right.
That I always come back to. And, you know, again, I had a really poor sleep last night just with some, you know, just thoughts running through my head all night. It was a really bad sleep. And I still made the choice to go and work out this morning because I knew that, like, putting in 30 minutes of moving my body, I knew that I would get a sweat up. I would feel mentally clearer and proud of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Listen to your body. Rest if you need to rest, but also understand that it's not always the case.
Definitely.
Now, the next one I love as well, and that is exercise is said to help memory and thinking through both direct and indirect means. Benefits come directly from its ability to reduce insulin resistance, reduce inflammation, and stimulate the release of growth factors. So chemicals in the brain that affect the health of brain cells, the growth of new blood vessels in the brain, and even the abundance and survival of new brain cells. Many studies have suggested that the parts of the brain that control thinking and memory, so that's your prefrontal cortex, and your medial temporal cortex have greater volume in people who exercise versus people who do not. There's a really amazing TED talk on this. I don't know if you've listened to it.
No.
I'll send you the link. I'll try and put the link in the show notes as well now that I've mentioned it. But it's a TED talk from a lady speaking about how exercise impacts your brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really fascinating. I'll get that link in there for you.
Yeah, and I mean, who wouldn't want to exercise if it improves your memory and thinking? Sometimes, I mean, imagine if you are going through a really tough spot, just, you know, working.
Just imagine.
Imagine, you know, you're working and it's and your mind is just on 1,000 other things, and going and moving your body, how you come back so much clearer and you have that focus and ability to, you know what you're doing and have the ability to process and think, you know, that who wouldn't want to do that when you're struggling, if you're studying for whatever reasons, work, whatever it might be.
Absolutely. And I think that we all know that at a base level. Like, I know myself, after a good workout, I feel so much mentally stronger and clearer.
Mm-hmm.
But even just getting, like, we know that. Well, a lot of us know that if your mental state isn't great, moving your physical state really can help.
Yes, definitely.
Love that. Reason number 8 is about immunity. So immunity is the ability to defend against infection and disease. Our immune system is composed of a variety of cells, tissues, and molecules, and evidence suggests that regular moderate activity is particularly beneficial for immune enhancement and reducing the risk of infection. So with this said, though, the adaptation of the immune system to physical activity is dependent upon the duration, intensity, and the type of exertion. But that's pretty incredible as well.
It is.
I mean, we're coming out of winter now, but in the lead up to winter, everyone's all about the Armour Force and the vitamin C and all of that stuff.
Antioxidants.
Yeah, yeah.
Garlic.
Yeah. The fire tonic.
That's it.
And, you know, those things are great for sure. But also, just don't forget that moving your body can be a great defense, you know, when it comes to your immunity.
And as it says, like, the adaptation of the immune system is dependent on the duration, intensity, and type of exertion. So obviously it could be different for everybody, and there's sometimes where exercising may make no difference. I must admit, I am that person that when I'm sick, sometimes I will still go and do a session. And times I feel better, and other times, obviously, it makes me feel worse. And I think, obviously, you've just got to listen to your body in those instances. But if we think more prevention rather than we do think fixing the problem once we have it, it can be really great if you are physically fit in all areas. We've already heard, you know, 7 awesome reasons why exercise can be beneficial to your overall health. If you are overall healthier, then obviously that's going to affect your immunity long term.
Yeah, and I just think when it comes to immunity, I mean, I've certainly been the mum who goes into the chemist, you know, when a cold or a cough is coming on for the kids, and I'll be like, what can I do for their immunity? And I'll happily invest money. Like, I'll be like, oh yeah, $80 for these immunity enhancing products for the kids or for myself. So thinking of exercise as an investment in your immunity is maybe another way that will help you welcome exercise with open arms by going, sure, this is an investment, and it's not doesn't have to be a cost investment. You don't need a gym membership. You can move anywhere. But it is looking after your family's wellness, because if you get taken out by a cold or a flu, it's hard to operate.
100%.
Number 9 now.
So your basal metabolic rate, which is basically the amount of energy that you burn at rest, including the energy the body uses to keep all of its systems functioning correctly.
So the amount of calories.
Basically kilojoules or calories just to live. And this is something I talk about often when I'm talking to clients about, say, weight management. But it's largely determined by your total lean mass.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah, for sure.
Sorry, my love. She's used to this. Before we go down that path of touching on this reason, for those people who don't know, a kilojoule and a calorie is the same thing but a different terminology. So a kilojoule is, I think it's
4.2 kilojoules.
Yeah. It's going to go to per one calorie.
Correct, yeah. So often people think they're different, but they're not. They're just a a unit of measurement for energy. So they are exactly the same thing. And if you see kilojoules on something,
just divide
by 4.2 and you'll get your calories.
All together now.
Yeah. So it is largely determined, or the basal metabolic rate is largely determined by your total lean mass, especially the muscle mass, because lean mass requires a lot of energy to maintain. So kind of linking in with that sarcopenia about maintaining that muscle mass, including regular exercise, can help preserve or increase your lean muscle mass, therefore increasing your daily energy expenditure, maintaining a high BMR, which in turn can assist with weight management. So often women, when they come and see me, will say, oh, I'm doing exactly the same thing as my husband and he's losing much more weight faster. And one of the biggest things I will say is naturally men have higher lean muscle mass than women. So because we are...
This isn't a sexist thing.
No.
This is like it's proven.
We're designed to have babies,
yeah,
and our body needs to be fit for that. And that does require generally us having
a little more body fat. Yeah.
That's correct. And that's just the optimum kind of growing space. But the reality is that we often just have to work a little bit harder at, number one, getting that muscle mass, mm-hmm, and two, maintaining that. But it does have some really great benefits when people are trying to work at increasing the amount of energy that they just burn at rest.
Yeah, interesting. So last but not least, number 10. In a study that we found on physical activity and self-esteem, it was found that physical activity was associated both directly and indirectly with improved self-esteem. It was seen... Here, Lou, there. My dog's
in the background.
If you heard that, that's just Lou putting her two cents in. It was seen that when people reported a higher level of physical activity, that this was associated with a higher level of self-esteem. It was also seen that when people naturally participated in more physical activity, they generally had a higher self-esteem as a result of lower body mass index and also higher perceived physical fitness. So I think that that's a really important reason to end on, because who doesn't want to have better self-esteem,
mm-hmm,
and more confidence? And exercise can help you with that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you are feeling good about yourself, sometimes we exercise, we feel better about ourselves because we might see the changes in the way we look. We might see the changes in, you know, how fast we can go on the stair mill. And that kind of motivates us to keep going. And it's self-esteem in a different way. It's not in vain. It's just in, you know, you like what you're seeing and the results.
And that's one thing, like it's so important to actually, if you are going to be exercising, to exercise from a place of self-love and not self-loathing. Mm-hmm. I've certainly been in a place where I've exercised from self-loathing, you know, in my early 20s for sure. But it's so different when you're actually coming from a place of, you know what, I love this vessel that I have. I want to make it strong. I want to feel good. And you do get the byproduct of the, you know, what's the word? You get the byproduct of the results of putting in the work, you know.
Yeah.
You might see that your clothes become a little looser or they start to fit a bit better or whatever it is. But as long as that's like not the main goal, as long as you're exercising for the other reasons,
mm-hmm,
those other reasons, they just come along.
Yeah, and I think I've also been at that point. You know, I work as a dietitian and have for the last 8 years. I'm now also a personal trainer. And 5 years ago, I competed in a fitness competition, which I won. And I'm so proud of myself for what I did. But the
reality
is...
She's just got the trophy here on her desk.
And the tiara. No, no, the
tiara. But sash. She wears a sash every day. It's wild.
But the reality is that, you know, after that competition, I, even though I had all the qualifications and the skills, after that competition, I found that I was exercising out of guilt.
Mm.
You know, I had to be at the gym if I ate that little extra bit, or I had to do this. And it took me a good few years to overcome that. And I guess transitioning to being a stepmom, having a partner, you know, I had to learn to adapt my physical activity and my exercise and my general movement to find that I actually want to move because I like the way it makes me feel, and I move because I know it's better for my health. And I have health conditions which are impacted by all of these things, but when you get to that place, it's a really wonderful place.
Yeah, it is. So hopefully, you know, you've been able to take at least one of these reasons that we've shared with you today, and hopefully it'll stay with you and make a change with the way that you look at exercising. I know myself, the biggest thing is that I want to always be able to keep up with the kids. And I know that's kind of a cliche, like people say, oh, I want to be able to keep up with the kids or whatever it is, but it's true. I want to be the mum that can sit down the slide with them and can chase after them and lift them up for a cuddle. Like still the boys are nearly six and I can just lift them both up still at once. And that's something that, like, you know, I wouldn't be able to do if I wasn't looking after my physical health as well as my mental health.
Definitely.
So thank you for listening to this episode. We really hope you've enjoyed it. I would love to see what you're up to, where you are while you're listening. So please do take a screenshot right now, pop it up on your stories. Make sure you tag me, which is at Kylie Camps, and Mel's work account is
at MSB Your Diet Revolution, all one word.
I'll pop that in the show notes as well. And thanks again for listening, and we'll chat with you next week. Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.